Spirit 88.9 FM, good morning. We are Catholic Radio for the Christian community. You're tapped into Spirit Mornings with Bruce McGregor and
Chris McGregor.
And today we are joined by Roger Kimball. He is the co-editor and publisher of New Criterion and the publisher of Encounter Books. Also the author of several books himself, including the now classic Tenured Radicals, How Politics Has Corrupted Our Higher Education, and The Long March, How the Cultural Revolution of the 60s Changed America. Roger lectures widely, a frequent contributor to the Wall Street Journal, National Review, and other publications in America, and over in jolly old England, lives with his wife and son in Connecticut. And we have Roger with us today because we're going to be talking about a book that was originally authored by David Stove called Darwinian Fairy Tales, Selfish Genes, Errors of Heredity, and Other Fables of Evolution. David Stove passed away in 1994, shortly after completing this particular book. Roger, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Roger, it is a pleasure to be speaking with you because New Criterion is one of my favorite magazines. I think it helps you think. That's what I like about
it. A woman of impeccable taste since I was on the show.
Well, it's because of your influence in the magazine, but also with Encounter Books. I think you have probably some of the best titles out there. We just recently spoke with James Bowen discussing Honor.
Yes, that's a terrific book, if I do say so myself. And Jim, as you know, is a frequent contributor to the New Criterion as well.
It just helps us to think, and I am so glad that you have brought us the work of David Stove, because Darwinian Fairy Tales is very timely, actually. I don't know if you're aware, but there's a group in Rome that gathers once a year. It's called the Ratzinger Student Circle. It's fascinating. It takes an old theology professor who just happens to be Pope Benedict XVI right now and his former students, and they discuss a new topic every year. And this year, they're talking about creation and evolution.
Ah, well, we have to send them a few copies of this book.
I think you should, because what's wonderful about this, and I think the reason they would love it, is that this isn't about science as much as it's about thinking and why Darwin doesn't work, because if you logically use his thought process, it just is filled, as the book states often, with errors.
Yes, well, what Darwinian Fairy Tales does is it subjects some of the weirder but also most influential tenets of Darwinism and neo-Darwinism to the astringent view of common sense.
Mm-hmm.
David Stove was a philosopher. He himself was an atheist, but he just, you know, became very impatient with the nonsense that was being spouted, the dogmatic nonsense that was being spouted by cavalier Darwinists. So this is a book, although it was completed a decade ago, it's very much up to date because it includes all of the theorists who are so popular today, people like Richard Dawkins with Selfish Genes and Daniel Dennett and other sociobiologists. I mean, some of the things that they say are really quite amazing. For example, E.O. Wilson, who's a very prominent biologist and, you know, in many ways an important thinker, but whenever he steps into the realm of sociobiology, he just seems to, acquire a kind of blinkers about what human life is really like. For example, he says that an organism is only DNA's way of making more DNA. Now, just stop and think about what that means. True that E.O. Wilson himself is just DNA's way of making more DNA. Well, of course not. It's what we see with Darwinian theory, especially in its more flagrant sociobiological form, is a kind of puppet theory of human nature. In many ways, it's no different from an astrological view of human nature, or a Freudian view of human nature, or a Marxist view of human nature. These are all incredibly reductionist ways of looking at what human life is like. For the Marxist, everything can be explained by economics. For the Freudian, everything can be explained by the id and other instinctual drives. For the astrologer, our fate is written in the stars. For the Darwinist, our fate is written in our genes. It's quite an extraordinary act of reductionism that is propagated by these theorists. And David Stove exposes it with really uncommon wit and a devastatingly acute philosophical acumen.
What I love about reading this, Roger, Darwinian fairy tales, is that for me, through using Darwin's own theories, it almost made me realize and understand how the human being, actually did develop differently, that you can apply it like you would the animals, how man is more separate.
Yes, well, I mean, obviously something like evolution has taken place. I think few people today who would deny that. But as Stove points out, the further up the chain of life you go, the less pertinent it is. I mean, Darwin's theory of natural selection works very well if you're talking about cod, pines, or bacteria. You know,
exactly.
Some of the basic theory of Darwin is a combination of, as Stove points out, the idea of heritable variation, that offspring tend to differ from the parent stock, together with the Malthusian notion that every organic population tends to increase up to the limit of the food supply and beyond it. Mm-hmm. Those things together provide the motor of natural selection and evolution as Darwin understands it. And that is still that's the case with, you know, sociobiology and all of the current theories as well. That is they see that as the basic motor of evolution. The problem is that it just doesn't work for, not only for human beings, it doesn't even work for your pet dog or cat. I mean, do you know, if Darwin were correct, every organism would have as many offspring as it could.
Right.
Do you know anyone of whom that is true? Probably not.
That's the whole idea. For example, if our goal is to constantly reproduce and remanufacture ourselves, that's the ultimate goal of a species, then in the human species, how can you explain, for example, a hero?
Right.
You know, someone who puts himself out and will potentially even have himself killed, preventing himself from being able to reproduce to be able to save weaker people.
Right. I mean, that's why. I mean, that's a very good example. I mean, there are. You know, if Darwinian theory were true, there would be no such things. Not only as heroes, there wouldn't be a police force, there wouldn't be hospitals, there wouldn't be old age homes, there wouldn't be the welfare state. I mean, you just could not explain human life, and that's why you find. Darwinians of every stripe, they go into a cold sweat when confronted with the reality of altruism, for example.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
They have these elaborate theories trying to explain, either to say, well, there really is no such thing as altruism, it's just a kind of a clever ploy, or else they baldly deny it. They say, well, there really isn't such a thing as altruism. People are obviously just selfish right to the core. But it's clearly not the case. And so if you confront Darwinian theory with the richness of human experience, you find that they are, reduced to promulgating these baroque equivocations to try to explain the most basic human facts. For example, the love of a mother for her child.
Exactly. They go on to say that because we have adoption, that's not something that would fit into a Darwinian category.
Yes. I mean, if Darwinian theory were true, I mean, a prominent Darwinian has actually said this. He said that it is to the advantage of a mother that her child be adopted because that frees her up to have, you know, more children. Now, what mother do you know this to be true of? None. Mm-hmm. I mean, we would consider such a person an emotional monster, and rightly. What you have here is a very strange phenomenon of a science that has become bewitched by its own theoretical structure. I mean, it is true that Darwinian theory is the most successful biological theory in the history of the discipline. The problem is that because it explains some things, it does not necessarily explain everything. And that's what you have found, partisans of Darwinian theory doing, is trying to elevate a theory that is very good at explaining some kinds of phenomenon. They want to elevate it into a kind of global explanatory principle that will explain all of organic life. And once they do that, then they find themselves tied into knots of contradiction, I think.
And it makes me nuts. I was watching book TV on C-SPAN this last weekend, and they had a scientist who was talking about Francis Crick and the discovery of DNA.
Yeah.
And the questioners who came up afterwards were asking about a society that would question evolution.
Yeah.
And aren't those poor, ridiculously imbecilic, online folks who would question evolution?
Yeah.
And yet, if you were to take everything that David Stove has said, they're the ones who actually end up looking ridiculous.
Yeah, so I think this is a an extraordinarily brilliant book. It's written with wit, passion, incandescent intelligence, and that rarest, that most uncommon of qualities, namely common sense. I mean, your science is not very good if it cannot explain the everyday appearances of the reality that we live with. And that is exactly what Darwinian theory cannot do. I mean, it can explain a lot of things if you go down to the, you know, way down the chain of life.
Mm-hmm.
We even get to things like birds or cats or dogs. It begins to have, you know, real trouble. And when you get to human beings, it's a mass of contradictions. I mean, when Richard Dawkins talks about selfish genes, a gene is a little bit of DNA. It can no more be selfish than it can be amusing or humorous or ambitious. Or I mean, it's a molecule. Molecules do not have that. It's a kind of category mistake. And he builds out of that metaphor a gigantic puppet theory of human nature that not only does it fail to explain human nature, it's completely at odds with it.
And we have talked about in this Darwinian theory how the things we might consider virtuous or of the good, like heroism or having children. But when you look on the other extreme, too, the human species is one that has homosexuality.
Yeah.
And that doesn't reproduce.
Just begin with the A's, as David Stove said, and, you know, to contradict Darwinian theory. I mean, you know, alcohol, you know, a fondness for alcohol, altruism, you know, sexual practices of homosexuals and so on. All of these things either tend to reduce the number of offspring one has or shorten one's life or both. And as such, they are not a problem for Darwinian theory. They contradict it. It's the end of it. If we aren't talking about sort of theoretical difficulties here. We're talking about facts, the facts of reality that actually contradict it. And what is amazing to see is the kind of knots that that the partisans of Darwinian theory will tie themselves into trying to get out of these contradictions.
Right.
And as Stove points out, that I mean, if you were to take Newton's theory because it is a theory. And so if, let's say, like, for example, the moon up above the Earth, if that theory didn't hold true, that and the moon fell into us or something like that, then that theory wouldn't be valid.
Yeah. Now, it's an interesting question to ask. You know, what would it take to convince the partisans of Darwinian theory that there was something wrong with it, that its scope was less limited than they had hitherto hoped? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it seems to me that the very facts of human life, as we experience it every day, are a pretty powerful refutation, and yet it doesn't seem to have made much of a dent. It's a curious kind of combination of arrogance on the one hand and dogmatism on the other hand. What you have here is a very good example of what some people have called scientism, which is not, it's the sort of elevation of science. The science comes from the word meaning to know. The elevation of science into a kind of almost a fetish, and the assumption, the arrogant assumption, really, that whatever transcends the bounds of human knowing somehow must not be legitimate or must not have a real claim on us. And that is a very short-sighted and I think also a very dangerous attitude to foster. And yet it is one that, alas, increasingly, I think, our culture has subjected itself to.
Well, again, Encounter Books brings us more food, rich, delicious, wonderful food for thought when it comes to Darwinian fairy tales. And I just, Roger, we just appreciate you keeping the work of David Stove in the forefront.
Well, terrific. It's been a pleasure to be with you, and you can get it on our website or at Amazon.com.
Yeah. I absolutely love, too, in the book here, you point out that Stove's discussion of Darwinian theory shows that when it comes to our species, Darwinism, quoting, is merely a festering mass of errors.
Yeah.
I can tell you lots of truths about plants, flies, fish, and so on. Interesting truths, too, but if it's human life you'd most like to get to know about and to understand, then a good library can be begun, by leaving out Darwinism from 1859 to the present hour.
Right, 1859 being the date of the publication of On the Origin of Species.
Yeah.
excellent work. But again, yep. Roger, thank you so much. And what do you have in the works? I'm looking forward to the next Kimball work.
I'm doing a few things. Probably the first thing that will come out is another book on the university called Retaking the University, A Battle Plan.
Ah, we'll have to have you on for that, if that's okay.
That'll be fun.
Absolutely. Well, Roger, again, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Again, the book that Roger has put forth an introduction to is called Darwinian Fairy Tales, Selfish Genes, Errors of Heredity, and Other Fables of Evolution by the late David Stove. Roger, again, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.